Hi, it's Bob here, and this is something I felt I needed to do. I avoided it, but I have to do it. A lot of us lost someone. I lost a dear friend for my entire life, and it's, this is going to be hard. I'll try to keep it short, by the way. My friend Norm MacDonald. Norm MacDonald, or as David would call him, Norm MacDonald. Many of you have been responding, the comedy community, comedians, writers, actors, but people that are smart, that understood Norm, that loved Norm. I'm recording this for all of you. And yes, selfishly, I'm recording it for myself. Because I need to, I don't know, people were contacting people that I work with and asking for statements and comments, and I just felt it'd be better to do it this way, in a conversational, almost non-quotable way, because I'm not functioning too well. This is, and this isn't about me, but it's going to be from my perspective. So this is a loss when you lose someone. I've lost two sisters and a couple parents, my parents, not random parents. And I've lost many friends. And this is just a fucking knife in the heart for all of us that were close to him and all of you who loved him. And for me personally, this is, I don't know, I'm just doing this on the fly and seeing if it can make a point or give some stories that might bring you a smile and let you even know from my perspective of why this is a beloved, wonderful man who we've lost. I guess I'll start less solemn. That's impossible, right? Because, you know, when it happened yesterday, today is Wednesday, by the way, and we're going to put this out tonight, after midnight, where most of you that love Norm will be awake. And the people close to him will be up because we're fucked up. We just can't sleep. But I found out that he had passed before it hit the deadline, Hollywood. Why do they call it deadline? Now, Norm would probably not mind me saying that, but he would have said, would have deadline. He would have hit the dead. God damn it, I love that man. So, that being said, I found out, and then it was in the press, and then the floodgates opened, and I couldn't even go online. I can't look at clips of him. Although I have, right before I recorded this, wanted to see a couple things. Everybody's sharing stuff, and, you know, he was a comedic genius. Anybody that didn't get it, I'm sorry for you that you didn't get it. He was one of the, he's one of the most important people in my life and one of the sweetest. And we loved each other. So I met him. He was 17 years old and I was 21 or 22. It was 1978, I think, or 79. One of those two, probably 78. And I was working in Ottawa at a club called, I don't know, Snickerdoodle or something. I don't even remember. It was a Giggles. I don't know. But Norm was in the audience. I think he was doing some stand-up at 17. I'm not sure. But he was like literally 6 feet from me. So it would have been a good distance for COVID where he was sitting. He had a bushy haircut, a big one. I'm sure you've seen it. Some people, I really loved seeing some pictures that people posted of him at that age that I saw, because it was this sweet guy who had a brain and bandwidth that most people aren't born with, who was also, like most comedians, an outsider. And we talked. We talked at the bar, and I remembered it specifically a few years later when I met him for real in clubs in Canada. I think it was it Yuck Yucks? I'm not sure. It just doesn't matter, right? But the point is, he was in my life, and I was in his in an acquaintance kind of way. And then a bunch of years passed, and we would see each other on the comedy scene, and we became friends. And everybody I know would get into the room to watch him on stage. Sometimes he would purposely tank, as you know. Anybody that understands, they call him a comics comic. That's just, you know, I hate that expression. But I guess it's true because comedians couldn't help but laugh at him because he was so fucking brilliant. And he would say things that might not be able to be said by anybody. I mean, they wouldn't be able to be said by anyone else. We're talking about an original voice. And his influences were all the usual suspects, all the people that, you know, that love comedy. You can see who his roots were. But he found a way to do things that came from a voice that nobody had. I'd never heard anyone like him. He loved dark humor from the very beginning. If you look at these clips, I was able to see a couple of them when he was one of his very earliest appearances. I think it was on Conan. He's just this young, thin lad, and talking about death and dark stuff and murder. And those are themes because Norm needed to feel things very, very deeply. And Norm did feel things very, very deeply. So when on that amazing Letterman appearance 2 weeks before David went off the air and Norm was the last stand-up comedian to go on there, and I only know this, I know all about it because we had talked about it, but watching, listening to the Howard Stern interview from 2016 is a valuable piece. Just to see his love for David, he didn't know what he was going to say. And the people that he really loved, he would tell them. So if you're one of those lucky people, because he'd gone through a lot. Norm was very complicated, right? So we're talking about a guy at 14, 15 years old, had a difficult upbringing. And he said it. You know, he made it known he didn't have much of a father figure in his life, so David was kind of one. He revered intelligence and was drawn to it, and when people got him, it meant the world to him, and that's kind of the thing that made him a comic's comic, because I hate saying that. I got to erase that from my mind. But he would love smart people. He loved Howard, and he loved David, and he, you know, everybody, Conan, he had such a strong kinship. And as Norm would say, God bless all those people for getting him and loving him because they're so funny and smart. I got roasted on Comedy Central. I'm going to go all over the place because I can't. I don't know what else to do. This is me just saying I love Norm. When I got roasted, I talked to him a week before the roast, and he called me and he said, Saget, I can't, this is a bad impression, I can't help but do it though. Saget, I can't say mean things about you, you're my friend. I don't even want to do it, but I'm going to do it because it's you. And we'd been through a bunch of stuff, you know, we did dirty work and that thing. It's so funny, people say, Bob doesn't get through, you know, any interview without mentioning at least twice that movie. Now a tear comes down my face. I loved working with him. It wasn't easy because he was a perfectionist and he was a complex carbohydrate. He was I don't want to say was, but I have to. I got to be in reality myself. But, you know, so we'd gone through so much together, ups and downs. And so at the roast, he called me a week out, said, I'm just going to read jokes from a 40s joke book. And I said, Norm, that's fine. I mean, you know what you're doing, but you got to curse. I don't want to do that. And I said, well, if just throw in an arbitrary fuck now and then. Nah, I'm not going to do that. And then you get to the roast. And okay, so what you see usually with the extended cut, which is not what it is, it's just everything about Norm is the big lie. There's a a 20-minute version. There's 20 minutes of footage where the people that were there know what happened in the room. Half of them did and half of them didn't because they didn't know what was going on because they didn't get it. But he was just taking the shot and doing, and people are like, this was the most brilliant thing, and it was. But a great stand-up, and Norm was one of the greatest ever, knows that they're not going to, bombing is not, doesn't matter. And that's what was fearless and beautiful about him, because bombing is just part of the art, part of the performance of it. And if you can offend people and get laughs, then you're in some kind of real special ethos. And he was doing that by reading these jokes, and then there were about 8 minutes that it was quiet, and that made this, you don't see the comedians laughing harder, but all of my friends, that's the idea of that roast, was as horrible as some of the things that were said, because it's a roast and it was a different time. But Norm, of course, chose the path of dignity and did jokes, and we were laughing on the phone the week before that he would hold the cards up to his head and do Johnny, face like a cauliflower. But we were doing all that stuff because he idolized Johnny, as all of us did. And so he was, they cut out the part that was bombing, and but it did. I would have loved to have seen the whole damn thing. I think the roast should have just been a bunch of people doing a bunch of horrible dick jokes and wow, some really wrong stuff on there, right? But it was funny for a lot of people. It's really split how you look at stuff from years ago, and people know what funny is. And Norm did the most brilliant thing, and I was so excited when he said, I said, you got a fucking dog face. And that if you look at the thing, I don't like looking at myself, and who does? But I like looking at me. But when he said that, that's when I was like, yeah, come on, start cursing. Just throw in arbitrary curses. Because at that point, he was digging out of a hole. That's what he was doing. But how fucking brilliant. Because it was so anti-roast. Because he didn't want to roast his friend. And he also didn't want to do a roast. So there's, it was a good toss-up whether he was doing it because he didn't want to hurt his friend, and also he didn't want to do a roast. He didn't love the form. He didn't mind listening to the old ones, but he wasn't equipped mentally or care enough to make fun of someone. It just, it seemed like okay, that's the joke. Making fun of somebody. Oh, great. Great format. Of course, he's reading the sports section while the other comedians are doing their stuff. And that, it's just, it's brilliance. It's an Andy Kaufman type thing, or anybody who knows what comedy is and doing some kind of, it's just Norm. It's just Norm. It's what he found funny. And then at the end, and I thought about, do I play it on here right now? And the answer is no. You can watch it. You can see it. I mean, at the end of the thing, he got emotional. And he doesn't mean to do it. He doesn't know what he's going to say, and he doesn't do it that often. But now I'm in present tense, right? Because I can't accept that he's gone, and that's the shock that we're going through. 61. That's a sin. That's a sin for all of us that he's gone. Anyway, to just finish that one thought, he told me, he loved me. And he told me publicly, and I loved him, and I love him. What do we do with that when we lose someone, right? Especially before their time. And I know most of you listening have lost someone, especially now, right? So he cared about people a lot, and he felt the human condition so deeply that it affected him in different ways. He would maybe act out back in the day, and no specifics needed. And in other ways, he would just even be more compassionate. And then in other ways, in stand-up, he would just go to the darkest place he could possibly go. And he made me better. He made me better as a comedian. But more importantly, he was a genuine friend. And our friendship was really very deep. And I could say that. I could say that without my name-dropping bullshit that I do sometimes and all of my other dumbass vices. Like everybody was posting when he died, and they love him. They you know, everybody's hurting over this one. This one. Yeah, right. I always, why can't unfunny people die? That's the, Saget, why'd you say that? But he, a week ago, we'd been working on something that we were going to do. And I think, everybody asked me, did you know? We're all TMZ, but also it's human to ask, did you know? I felt it. I knew something was wrong. I think a lot of us felt it. And then you just figure, well, that's norm, you know. So he's, whatever he's going through, you see it with a lot of us, you know, when people change appearance or whatever. But his mind was still amazing, right? And I have off-road stories about things he did. Anyway, just try to stay on one subject is... I'd been texting with him, and I knew that the last month was a turn in whatever was going on, and I suspected it was this cancer. I really love when everybody puts out F cancer. Maybe that should be the new non-for-profit, because fuck it. It's enough. It's enough. Let's get that thing somehow. I don't know. We're all test tubes for what we're trying to do with cancer, and thank God some people are moving forward healthy. He should be one of those people. Anyway, about 2 weeks ago, he texted me, "How are you? What are you doing? Are you doing stand up?" And I answered him with, you know, much too many words, and then I didn't hear back. And then last week, I got a text. And it just said, "I love you." And I didn't say much back. I just said, "I love you, Norm." And that was my last communication with him. But he didn't mince words. And he didn't mince emotions. So he wasn't out doing bullshit. He wasn't just out to, you know, oh, here's the emotional moment in a telethon where we're pretend we're feeling something so we can. One of the gifts to my life is that he loved me and that I loved him. Hell, I'm always going to love him. I mean, there's not another guy like this guy. I'll tell you a couple other things instead of how it turned into a slobbering maniac. I don't know. I'm just doing this because I don't know how else to do it. Adam Egit was somebody that he loved and worked with him. And everybody's hurting. We're all reaching out to each other. You know, it's a lot of comedians have been reaching out, texting and calling. And we're all, this is, you know, this is a big chasm for everybody. I don't know why I said chasm. What the fuck would I say that for? Why'd you use chasm? That's not even the right use of it. What are you, trying to go across a reservoir? He wouldn't say that. Reservoir's not funny. Got it. Adam's a good man. I went on Norm's podcast before it was a podcast, before he did the Netflix version of it. And he said, "Yeah, come over. Yeah. Is it audio only? Or do I have to look good?" And, yeah, it's audio only. Norm was really good at lying. And I'm sure you read all this stuff. He was incredibly skillful at it. But you could tell what talking to, if you knew him, you would either, if you see him, you would see it in his eyes that he's lying, or then you're not sure if he is, because sometimes he wasn't, but he always had that look. What a charming motherfucker. Shouldn't have said that. Charming is okay. But he told me to go do the podcast. I go over there. Adam is there. All of a sudden, there's cameras. I'm like, "It's Norm. I got to go fix my hair. What the hell? You didn't tell me that this was, I don't know what they're doing. I mean, they're putting it out, you know, blaming other people." like he didn't know it was video. And then, you know, he's helping me publicize a book. And then whenever he would say something horrible, he would say the name of the book and hold the book up. I mean, I laughed at him so, but left with him. I mean, I go on the podcast. Sorry, this will be profane. And it was worse than what I'm about to say. So if you're 12, probably 15, just go to bed. I get on the show and he goes, you like a big, fat, juicy cock? And he added other adjectives in there. And I was like, this is your show? What are you doing? So our relationship had a bit of an odd couple type thing where we would, and he loved that engagement. I don't know. He loved the fact that I would give him shit or kind of be in a parental role, oddly enough, or an older brother. He has a brother, Neil. He's a very good man. And his mom and his son. He was such a great father, such a great father. And I'm sending so much love to them. You know, I also have to mention someone. I'm just going to say her name, his closest friend for many years, Lori Jo. And I'm just sending so much love to her. This is so hard for his family and for friends like Adam and many other people that you're reading. You know who they are. You know who loved him. And it doesn't matter, you know, if you see somebody every minute. Norm's not a guy you would spend a lot of daily time with. Oddly enough, the past year and a half, we were spending time together, or at least talking a lot. The COVID thing had him hold up more. And when we all find out in retrospect, as you all have seen, all the stuff about cancer and his stand-up, and you know, oh, wow, this makes frightening sense now. And there is, after 9 years of fighting cancer, and I don't know any details. I can only speak from my experience and knowing that I was talking to a comedian that you all know, and he was saying that he believes he is at peace. And what's interesting is Norm was believed in faith. Norm was a spiritual man, and he kept it quiet. He kept a lot of his stuff quiet. But there's a reason his exclamatories would be, good Lord, good God. He would say things like that, and he believed in God. And I had people in my life that were very sick, and someone that I care about so much, and he would say, I'm going to pray for them. And he didn't mince words, and that's, you know, I'm going to pray for them. That's what someone that cares about you says, you know? This is not some guy doing his hijinks where the eyebrows go up and he's got that flim-flam man sparkle in his eye. Yeah, I said it. Nobody wants to say sparkle in his eye, but twinkle, that's the operative, right? But I'll share a couple more things. I don't know how much longer I can go on. He had people that he truly loved in his life that were always part of it. Adam Sandler. And Conan, and a lot of really interesting filmmakers and actors and people that he really regarded highly. He loved old films. He loved Clint Eastwood. He loved Burt Reynolds. We all know who he loved. You could watch what he would do on SNL. He also loved, you know, being that guy that's this. Norm MacDonald and a lot of comedians are the result of someone telling you your whole childhood, don't do that. You can't say that. Don't do that. Well, there he goes. It's 2 years of OJ jokes. And that's all anybody talks about, you know. But it was charming. it for me, it was, you know, I mean, just that's the shit that he would do. And he would also speak well of in a weird way. It's just there will be many people influenced and are influenced by Norm Macdonald, but there can't ever be another Norm Macdonald. I'll share a couple of the quick things that are fun. There's a story, I'm not going to tell it, but it was when he loved to play jokes on me and make a fool out of me, and I was playing golf with him and Artie Lang after Dirty Work came out, and it's a drinking game every time I mention the film's title, but it was important because we loved it, and he loved it. In fact, before I tell you this crazy thing, I will tell you that the night the movie premiered, Norm and I knew, we saw the poster for Dirty Work, and it was in 1998, and Norm and I looked at each other, and we saw the poster, and it said "Coming Soon" on it. We both did it literally at the same time with Carson. "Coming Soon, Kiss of Death." We didn't say that at the same time. But you don't kind of go, hey, sometime in the future, this movie's coming out. And it premiered on the weekend that Michael Jordan played his last two games with the Bulls. So, oh, there's our 15-year-old boy audience. They're gone. So we went to theaters. Norm and I got in a car the night the movie came out, and we went to 7 theaters, and they were all packed. It was Century City, Hollywood, Westwood. We literally went to 7 theaters, one after another, and people were screaming. They were laughing, not screaming, like, get me the fuck out of here. And we thought we had a hit. This is like, we're high-fiving. It's just like, you know, Ralph Cramden going, we're gonna make it, honey. This is it. And we were so excited to see it with an audience, and they were laughing so hard, and that was so awesome, right? And then the next morning, the producer, Bob Simons, called me and said, sorry, buddy, you know, just didn't do it. And that was that. So it's almost appropriate. So I read somebody call it a bomb, or, you know, it tanked or whatever. And I guess that's the point. That's the point of the underdog. And many people, it's a cult favorite, whatever that means. You don't have to join a cult to like the movie. So anyway, the movie came out, and this is right before it came out. Norm and Artie Lang and I are playing golf up in, I don't know where we were, some country club outside of New York. And then Artie just got a brand new Cadillac. I told the story on Stern, and I just drove it back. I wanted to drive it. Oh, I'll do this. I'll tell you, Mr. Control, asshole, me. And I bottomed out the car. I hit a big pothole. And I told you I wasn't going to tell the story, but I might as well tell a truncated version. And it busted the tire, and it cracked the axle. And Artie literally had to get the whole thing redone. I still owe him $2,000, I think. I tried to pay him, but I did pay to have a guy come with a tow truck to change the tire. The guy comes to change the tire. Norm comes over, says, hey, this guy, his kid really likes you. You got to sign an autograph and send it to him. When he's done, wait till he's done, and then go over and get his information so you can send the kid an 8x10. So the guy does all the work, and I get like $800 out of an ATM. I give it to the guy, and I say, hey, give me your address. I'll send it to your son. He goes, what are you talking about? I don't know who you are. And I look over, and Norm and Artie are just pounding the pavement, laughing their asses off. That's the kind of shit that was very similar to the experience of the characters they were in the movie. And then there was the Norm a couple years later that I had him over my parents for dinner. Now, my parents and my daughters, and I'm actually going to put some slides on this audio right now. That'll be when it gets posted on the YouTube and on the and on the whatever assets. I'm really talking hardcore Wi-Fi talk right now. And Norm was really sweet to my kids. They loved them. This is hard for them. And my youngest was really young, and he would just sit on the ground like he did with his son and just play with him. He had a very childlike quality, and it took him to a kinder time, I think, and he really could relate to kids, you know? And damn it, he was a good father and really good with kids because they were innocent and they didn't have all the bullshit that he couldn't take from people. He really just, when he couldn't stand somebody, he just got away. He just stayed to his own, you know, and that's probably a smart way to go about it rather than doing what everybody does, which is start fights these days. But anyway, so my parents, who he'd met on the set of that movie, which I will not name it again, he went to their condo in Brentwood for dinner. And my dad would make, my mom, I don't know who made them, beef ribs. And they would cook them for 24 hours. And they would be very soft, fall off the bone. And so my dad would go, he used to be in the meat business. So he would go market to market and find the least fatty bone. Anyway, they cooked for probably 2 days for a meal to have normal. And it was just my kids and my parents and my nephew and Norm and me. And he loved the meal, but more importantly, when something hit him hard, he would make a proclamation. He made a proclamation and he said, I just want to say, and this is not an audience, this is not anything, this is people that he cared about and was touched by. And he said, I just want to say I'm trying to get it almost close to reality of what he said. I just want to thank you for welcoming me into your home and how much it means to be with you all. And thank you for taking me in. And I just really appreciate it. And it was something almost close to what he said. But, you know, I didn't record the damn thing. And my kids didn't take notes, and I'd raised them anyway. So it was, and he was tearful, you know. It was real, and that's our relationship. That was always our relationship. And a lot of you that are close to him, or whoever's listening, I'm talking to 5 people probably. No, I'm talking to probably 100, 200 people that maybe know him on a deep level. And then the rest of you, I'm just feeling your pain because this is one of those bad ones. This is just one of them, you know. He just had a great deal of love. And that's how I remember him, is the love that he had. And we would screw around when we were in our 40s and hug each other, and then he would, you know, make a move and then have ungodly human strength, gargantuan strength for an angular, thin lad, man. And then I would attack him back in an overly physical way, which he enjoyed doing with some people. And he had some off-road habits, which I won't discuss. But there's, you know, the funniness, the incredibly deep funniness came from his deep, deep feeling of things. And he felt things incredibly heavy. And yeah, it is, I don't think it's strange that Norm MacDonald kept 9 years of cancer a secret. And I know that everyone that was on his business team in the closest of ways were sworn to secrecy. And that is, I think, completely appropriate. And I also think he thought he was going to beat it. And I do feel that he's at peace now. I truly do. I'm really sorry that a lot of you are going through this. And those that aren't and are discovering Norm for the first time, definitely do it. Do what people have been doing for 2 days. A lot of people I know have been doing it. They've been going through everything. Go through them all. Go through every Conan appearance. Go through, read his book. Watch his Netflix special. It's definable. And he knew it was. And he knew his book was. Because Norm was incredibly proud of himself and confident. Because he was an accelerated person. And I think things that happened in his career that didn't go the way he wanted also hurt him. It hurt him, you know, he was hurt by it. But he also knows showbiz, and he was very realistic about it. And you can read all of this. You can read it in his book. You can read it in interviews. There's some wonderful interviews out there. Because he had a sage's approach to many, many things. And he also knew who the good people were. And God damn it, he knew who the funny people were. So I guess that's I could go on with other stories about him, but it's all out there. So do yourself a favor if you haven't watched everything. Definitely read his book. Definitely watch his Netflix special. And watch everything you can from the moment he started doing it. And go through all the SNLs you want. He's just he's a gift. Norm MacDonald was a gift to all of us. And I will miss him always. And I will always love him. So I hope what rubs off on me is, amidst all of his trickery, which he always said he was doing, and his charlatan moves, which he always said he was doing, is the fact that that self-awareness and that honesty is what helps make me strive to be more honest. And I think a lot of people feel that way right now. We've lost someone that cut through to the heart of things, even with some of the most uncomfortable circumstances, and then would do it for his own pleasure. A lot of it was to bring himself pleasure. And he did not love the reiteration of stand-up and thought it was like a joke. And, you know, he goes to town like a carny barker and does the same stuff. But I would differ with him on that. And I did. I got to tell him. And I think that's the closeness also, was anybody that got the man. So if you want to do anything to honor Norm, don't just do it like once, you know. Honor him by getting him. Honor him by trying to understand. If you don't get it, just watch his stuff. Watch as much as you can. Watch when he hosted SNL. That's fucking hilarious. He was beautiful. He was an amazing father. He was an amazing son. He was a great brother. And he was a great friend. And I would just say, I think he is resting in peace now. And I love you, Norm. And God bless you. Take care, everybody.